Friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA. He's been a guest a couple of times on this program here, and he has a niche, and he fills that niche because he is a violinist, a concert soloist, a recording artist. He's a music educator, and he is very welcome back to us as I welcome Gregory Harrington. How are you,
Adrian? How are you? I'm great. Great,
now,
thank you.
You have traveled not only the Americas, but you have traveled through Asia, through Europe, through places, some of the greatest concert halls.
Yeah. It's exhilarating to be doing that. I mean, I just recently got back from a tour of China, which was truly fascinating. You know, it's such a different culture, and the outlook is so different over there. But the concert halls, it was a 7-city tour, and basically I was selling out concert halls of about 1,000 people each night, which I was delighted with. And like the National Arts Center in Beijing is probably one of the most beautiful centers I've been in. I mean, the design and their architecture. Yeah, it's fascinating. I mean, just to be able to get on these stages and, you know, to play to a packed audience and feed off the reaction of a completely different culture.
How do the different cultures, how do they know about the for instance, you are primarily a soloist.
Yes, that's right.
And so how do they know about, how does that work when you're talking about worldwide?
Well, a couple of things. Like, I would normally go through a tour promoter, or I would do it myself. Mm-hmm. So either or. And then when I'm out there, I usually utilize a lot of the embassies.
Yeah.
And so you would do your own promotion in terms of, you know, you get onto all the local magazines, the radio stations.
Right.
And whatnot in that respect. So you have a little bit of local help with the tour promotion, and a lot of it I do myself, you know, in terms of just grassroots. You know, embassies will be out there, they'll know sort of where to go and what to do, and then the rest mm-hmm. is up to you.
Yeah.
You know, but it's also the music. I mean, when what was so successful in China was I did this movie program, so it was basically just all movie, classical music from the movies, whether that was a little bit of Bach, whether it was all the John Williams stuff, the Ennio Morricone, a little bit of Skyfall from Baddell, you know, but it's just something that bites them and something, you know, that
right.
you can grab onto.
Now, do they judge you differently as, I you know, at this stage it became, whereas you were bread and buttered in Ireland and graduated from the Royal Irish Academy
That's
of
right,
Music
yes.
and so forth, but you're still considered to be somewhat of a New York musician and entertainer.
Yes, that's right. I mean, I think that comes from just I'm here 13 years, and you know it's being very comfortable in this and loving you. I mean, truthfully, I only realized about 2 years ago that I'd officially emigrated.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't come over I came over to college. I won a competition. I gave my first performance in Carnegie. Like, that was 10 years ago now. And at the time, it wasn't a conscious decision to emigrate. It was a conscious decision to get better and to progress the career.
Right.
So I'm here and I love it. I mean, I'm sort of integrated into different fabrics of the culture here. And it's wonderful.
In addition to playing some of the you know, the most amazing venues throughout the world, you've also entertained, for instance, the Vice President of the United States and a lot of dignitaries
yes.
along the way. One of the things that makes you, I think, probably different, and it is part of something we don't associate with violin virtuosos, is that you develop a rapport with the audience because you tell them
You have
what it is,
yeah,
that you are doing, which is actually very welcome,
yeah,
because most times, particularly in the area of classical music, you go in there and you get the catalog, the brochure,
the program, and you sit there for 2 hours,
right? And if you're like some of us, then you don't even get to read this until you've
gone
left
home.
The place.
Absolutely.
But you,
is that
the educator in you?
No, I think it's more the communicator, because nobody wants to go to a concert and feel cold. Feel that sort of cold emotion from not connecting with the performer. And as a performer, first and foremost, it's always about your audience. It's always about connecting. It's always about giving them something that they can feel, that they can identify with.
Right.
Irrespective.
And if they don't know, you're about to tell them.
Absolutely. You have to give them something, because then actively they have something they can listen to. You know, irrespective of whether it's a storyline behind a piece, whether it's an antidote, whether, you know, I played Schindler's List for Liam Neeson once, or whether it's, you know, when I played for the Vice President, his great grandfather was, was a blind Irish fiddler from County Louth. So I played a wonderful piece by Turlough O'Calloran, who is our blind.
Sure.
You know, so it's about connecting.
Mm.
And I think everybody wants to be connected with, you know, and feel that special reason for hearing, like emotion. I will always say this, when somebody writes music on a page, it is the best representation that they can do of emotion. So, you know, you just have to make those notes on the page alive.
Mm-hmm. You also have an opportunity, of course, to do your own interpretation,
yeah,
of music, and particularly, and that's obviously important to you. In the sense that, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but for instance, if you're a pit musician, working the pit,
sure,
of shows or of concerts, or for that matter, in that entire area, you read what is in front of you.
That's true.
And you need to stick to it.
Yes, because you're playing in a larger ensemble.
Right, and there's no room actually there to put in.
For improvisation, there's not. The difference, and they're phenomenal musicians that do this, because the discipline required to do that is incredible. I think what I try and do is, I love to take something. You have to differentiate yourself, and B, you have to find your voice.
Mm-hmm.
And if you listen to the great instrumentalists or whoever, the fact that, for example, Louis Armstrong or Chet Baker or whoever it is, if they had taken a different instrument, it wouldn't have mattered. That voice would have come right out.
Yes.
You know, whether Yo-Yo Ma took a cello or a violin or whatever, that voice would have come out. So I feel very passionate about the things that I have to say through the music that I love.
Uh-huh.
So I arrange it in a way that I think is going to be unique. You know, if you take, let's say, U2's song One,
yeah,
beautiful, beautiful ballad, and you put that in a very jazz setting for piano and a beautiful violin and some brush drums and a double bass, and you just reimagine it in a different way, and nobody in there will question that this is One, but you want them to walk away and say, God, you know something, there is no other way that I could have heard that play tonight.
Hmm.
Then you're giving them something unique. You're giving them something that they can think about. They don't have to like. They can love. But if you're organic about it, it's great.
Are there renditions of the same tunes, songs, of your performance on stage that relies on your actual mood of the moment?
I think you feed a lot off the audience. I mean,
yeah,
you know, when you practice, wherever you're practicing,
right,
that's one thing. But once you're, let's say, main hall, you feed off the audience, and it's a beautiful feeling because you just get that electricity.
Now, the flip side of that is that if you are there and you are performing and you get a sense from the audience that this is not, that they're not with you.
Yeah.
Or maybe the selection of the performance that you're there is somehow a miscalculation.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's you against the crowd.
Yep. Nothing like it.
What's the MO then?
Basically, you have to do something, and this is all about thinking on your feet. So whether you're in front of five people or 5,000 people, it's a case of how do you do this so that, how do you change it so that you can actually grab them? Whether that's, you know, just sonically getting them. I mean, you know, the great cellist used to Rostropovich used to always say, it's one thing playing so loud that you bowl them over. The trick is, how do you play so softly so that everybody in the auditorium leans right into you? And I think once you can do that, that's more powerful than the latter. So I think you've got to find a way to get them to lean in and really, really listen to what you're saying.
You're going to play something for us, but there is one question that I would like to ask you, because it has happened to anybody, anybody who's, even those who haven't played professionally, is that if you are slotted and if your performance is highlighted,
yes,
and somehow the timing of this may come after a long speech or after people who have been before you come on a captive audience,
yes,
and they wouldn't care if the Pope was there at that stage,
yes,
but you have to go on,
yeah,
and you have to do the best you can, and in fact now you are doing a great performance, but people have had it. They're ready to move on. They're ready to now chat.
Yeah.
They're ready to, and we all have had those occasions.
Of course.
Now, Gregory Harrington, what do you know that on your walking out?
Well, let me answer it this way. For example, like if you're at in New York City, if you're at a function, a beautiful dinner, and everybody wants to go home, and you are on, you've got two things. You keep it short, you keep it sweet, but you make sure that everybody, you capture everybody's attention. And that can be as simple as your dedication, or I mean it's all in your playing, but you can just go, you can hit them right at the very beginning,
right,
or you can suck them right in. It's again, you want to create such a quiet that they have to listen. You want to create such you want to give them something that challenges how they think.
And that is that decision made from the time you come from the curtain to the microphone? Is that a...
I think, you know, if I'm
trying... Or are you determined? This is what it's going to be?
I think any time you walk on stage, you want to give a performance that you will want everybody in that room to walk out and say, that was fantastic. And that's the only way you walk on stage. I mean, that's the only reason you do these things.
You have a concert and a performance coming up here.
That's right,
it's going to take place at in Carnegie Hall. This will not be a shock. You play Carnegie on many occasions.
That's right. Yeah.
But again on December 4th at 8 p.m.
Yeah.
You will be, it says supporting, but actually, the opening band, whatever it is, in many occasions turns out to be, sometimes, mischaracterized, because you are not in competition.
No.
With the New York tenors.
Tenors, indeed.
What you are doing is, though, you have a 20-minute slot there, and many people who may go to a particular performance, you either, again, you grasp them or you don't by the lead-in.
Yep.
But you are,
yes.
Obviously, you have that slot. It's the initial slot
before the boys walk on.
So, for something like that, that's...
Yeah.
First of all, 20 minutes is a long time.
It is indeed. It is, but you know, it's... You know, you walk on stage, and you have. I'm going to play four pieces, and mm-hmm. I want to make sure that I'm going to get everybody in the audience. So there's the most sensual and beautiful Piazzolla, which is a South American slow tango.
Yes.
So you start with that, and I've got my ensemble behind me, beautiful brush drums, the most virtuoso double bass that I know, and a fantastic accompanist. So we'll move from there, and we'll do some gypsy fiddling. So then
uh-huh.
we really, really get that virtuoso thing out of the way. And then a piece that I love is my version of Etta James' At Last, the great Harry Warren song.
Yes.
And I finish with, especially that it was Veterans Day, actually, last Monday. But my signature piece is the Ashokan Farewell, which is the PBS series The Civil War. And, you know, any time I play that, I will always dedicate that to the men and women that serve this wonderful country.
I like the fact that when you come to us, that you bring your violin and that you are quite happy as a soloist to play something for us.
Absolutely.
What are you going to do?
I'm going to do a beautiful piece that I grew up with, and this is the Coolin, gorgeous Irish melody.
Yeah.
It's just it's the one piece that I just remember since childhood, and it's not played that often, but it's beautiful.
Okay, let's hear it. And friends, you are listening to Irish Radio Network USA. My guest in studio, rosining the bow, is Gregory Harrington, and again, he is a violinist, a concert soloist, recording artist, a music educator. And we're always delighted. We see him, we meet him at occasions where maybe many people don't know exactly who he is, but by the time they leave, they remember him. Okay? So, all right, Gregory?
Perfect.
Go for it. Okay. Amazing. So lovely. I want you to play just a little bit, if you don't mind, of a song that has, of a tune that stops everybody in their tracks when you do perform in high society or medium society. But when you start to play At Last, your waiter stop in the middle of the floor.
Yeah, fair enough. A little bit of a laugh.
Thank you. Okay, that's Gregory Harrington, friends, and the concert again. You might as well give it a plug while you're here. The concert is in Carnegie Hall,
the main hall. It's for the Futures in Education Diocese of Brooklyn. They're presenting, so a lot of the proceeds and benefits will go to them.
Good. And the New York Tenors.
New York Tenors, our very own Andy Cooney, who is a remarkable, remarkable guy, and such a wonderful advocate for Irish culture. So he is one of the tenors, and they have a great. It's their holiday concert. It's the you know, so
who are the other two?
Michael Amante and some people
Michael
may know
Will, yeah.
Daniel Rodriguez, who around 9/11 was that cop who did a lot of singing at the time and just really really captured hearts in New York. So yes, it's going to be a fantastic concert.
The New York Tenors, and indeed, I'm sure that if you Google Carnegie Hall, you get all that information.
Yeah,
well.
December 4th, 8 p.m., Main Hall, Stern Auditorium. Yeah.
Good luck.
Thank you so much, Adrian. It's a pleasure.
Friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA.